Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Welcome to the Vaporsmith's Freedom Hour with Freedom Fiends, Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
Rolling. Hey, Michael, how you doing?
Good. Happy Loyalty Day, Nima.
Ah, happy Loyalty Day to you, too.
What is
loyalty
day?
How loyal are you
day?
Feeling today?
I'm not feeling loyal. I really think that you cannot call yourself a libertarian and a patriot. I mean, a patriot in the sense of, like, you know, the Revolutionary War was good, but I don't think you can be a flag waver and be a libertarian. What do you think of that?
I agree completely.
Why?
And... because to me, patriotism is nothing but nationalism, at least in the sense that I think of it. And nationalism is basically believing that one group of people is better than another group of people based on the geographic location where they were born. And that just seems
ridiculous. Other than that, too, even nationalism, I mean, patriotism without the nationalism related component, patriotism is worship of the state, and libertarian is a word created from the opposite of authoritarian. So how can you worship the state and be anti-authoritarian at the same time?
Yeah, I don't think you can. Unfortunately, there are a large group of people out there who thinks that they can worship the state, but it's their own fantasy of what the state is. I think it's because they don't really understand the true nature of the state, that they think the state somehow protects certain liberties, or if it's around, it'll keep the law in order, and we won't have these damn teenagers spray-painting things, doing drugs, and all sorts of other stuff.
I know. So I guess the title of this episode is going to be, Can Libertarians Be Patriotic? Answer, first 2 minutes in, no.
No. Sorry, guys.
So Loyalty Day. Loyalty Day is May 1st in America. It's and in other countries. It's basically May 1st because of some riots hundred years ago. May 1st is sort of Labor Day in a lot of countries. It's May Day in America, and it's also a labor holiday in America. I mean, there were a bunch of Occupy protests in Seattle today, and we're recording this May 2nd. We're pretending it's
out of the bag.
We're pretending it's May 1st. Yeah. May 1st, there were a bunch of, you know, so-called anarchists breaking windows of stores saying we need more jobs, basically.
It's the broken window fallacy. They finally got it. They were trying to put a practical spin on the broken window fallacy.
So May Day is a left-wing socialist labor holiday in many countries, and there's a few countries where they had that, and then a right-wing government took over and often changed May 1st to Loyalty Day. And in America, May 1st is Loyalty Day. It's a legal holiday. It's not a national holiday that you get to take off for sure, but it is a real holiday. And it is, Wikipedia said, it is a day set aside for reaffirmation of loyalty to the United States and the recognition of the heritage of American freedom.
America has a heritage of freedom? Must be before my time.
Yeah, it was, man. I mean, I go back to that, one of the most spot-on cartoons I've seen in a long time. I don't know who did it, but it's like, it's supposed to be a U.S. soldier in Afghanistan reading a letter from his father. And it's like, dear son, your brother's in jail for pot. Your mom's in jail for having a gun in her purse. The bank took grandpa's home. Your uncle got arrested for not wearing a seatbelt, but thank God you're over there fighting for our freedoms.
Yeah, I think I've seen it. It's pretty hilarious. Yeah. Also interesting that Loyalty Day was first observed. It was called Americanization Day. So I don't know. That just kind of creeps me out. Like, I feel very Big Brother about that. Like, you must change me. The "ization," you know, as a suffix, seems to me to mean we're changing something fundamental about you. And it's kind of creepy in that sense, almost in a social engineering kind of way, don't you think?
Yeah. There's a Simpsons where Lisa goes to the beach and makes some friends. The whole family goes to the beach and they make some friends, and it's July 4th, and one of her friends is like, "We don't celebrate July 4th. My mom is French." And the other kid's like, "We do. My dad woke me up at dawn to take a loyalty oath."
Of course, nothing out of the ordinary. I mean, kids have to take a loyalty oath every day at school, don't they?
Yeah.
Is that a newer thing? How long has that been going on?
The Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance every single day at school.
That was every single day at school when I was a kid. And okay. I refused to do it at one point.
Really?
Yeah. When I was in seventh or eighth grade, I decided I didn't want to do it because I'd been reading Steal This Book by Abby Hoffman.
Nice.
And I just said, "I'm not going to say it." And they said, "Okay, you can go sit out in the hall while we do it and then come back in quietly." And I was like, "Cool." And I was really psyched about that because the other person that was out in the hall refusing to do it was the really hot transfer student from Canada, the chick that I liked. So I got to spend 2 minutes a day alone with her in the hall.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the football team threatened to beat me up. So I started saying it anyway, going back in and saying it.
Under threat of violence, of course.
Yes.
Horizontal yes. violence. How horizontally yeah. Infringing on your freedoms that was.
Yeah, and I'm sure if I'd gone to the principal and said, "They're threatening to beat me up for this," he would have pretended to want to deal with it, but would have taken the football, you know, he would have taken the football team out for ice cream or something. Probably.
Yeah, yeah. He would have been like, "Kick him once in the nuts for me, boys."
Kick him once in the nuts for me. What's that from?
I don't know. That's from your childhood, apparently.
Stomp
Did you ever see that
nuts,
whitest kids you know skit where they have the yeah, stomp them in the nuts? Do you ever see that? There's a whitest kids you know skit. They're like a improv
Stop tapping.
Comedy
what are you tapping? Are you drumming?
Oh man, I was. I'm sorry.
Are you pounding the pulpit? Are you like? And furthermore, these people coming into our country and taking our jobs and.
Yeah, I was getting into politician mode. My bad.
That guy I interviewed yesterday, the former NRA guy who started the Guns and Weed Lobby, Guns and Weed Gun Rights Organization.
We wish they were called the Guns and Weed Lobby.
They sort of are, the new one, the one he started. You should check that interview out. It's on Anarchy Gumbo.
Definitely.
But he was pounding his table while talking. He's a pulpit pounder. I had to get him to stop.
Nice, nice. I feel like Scott Horton does it every now and then, but more
yeah,
of as
he did it
as like
I
an abbreviation, not an abbreviation. What is it? A punctuation, like at the end of a phrase, he's like, and then he pauses for a little bit, like, you know, "I'm so disgusted," kind of thing.
Yeah, Scott Horton's webmaster wrote to us and said he loved our live show, but he hated the Skype interrupting everything because he thought his Skype was going off, and somebody else said that since then.
And I'd never thought about it from that angle, but that makes complete sense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you're watching TV and the phone rings, you look around the house, that kind of thing. Or you're listening to a rap song, and as is often happening in rap songs,
there's
you hear
gunshot.
A siren. No, you hear like a siren, then you're looking behind you like, "What the fuck, man?" Or, sorry, I cussed.
That's okay, we can cuss. So I'm going to insert here. We made a, DJ and I made a, you and I talked about it, then we made a new ringtone for Skype. And we're using that now on my Skype that we get the calls with. So from now on, people won't be confused. And insert here.
Fiend phone. Fiend phone. Fiend phone. Fiend phone.
And, you know, I actually thought, isn't that cool?
That's awesome. I love it.
I actually thought of, you know, that's so cool, we should share it with the fiends and have it for download and instructions on how to put it in your Skype. And I'm like, no, that completely defeats the purpose, man.
Yeah, yeah.
No, it's like, it's the one thing we don't want to share because, yeah.
Right. Instead, I'll put it on my personal cell phone.
Yeah?
So that I know, because it won't confuse me.
Okay, well, use the second one that I sent,
because there's that space of silence in it, so it's not fiend phone, fiend phone, fiend phone, fiend phone.
Yeah, yep. So, yeah, man, loyalty day.
Loyalty day, yeah. Yeah, I'm loyal to freedom. You know, the thing about loyalty, even when I was younger, it always seemed kind of disingenuous to me. Like, sticking with some entity even when it's doing wrong, I never thought seemed very virtuous. And to me, inherent in loyalty, whenever I thought of loyalty, I would always think of, like, the mafia. And even my previous fiance, my ex-fiance, you know, she would always say that loyalty was her most important trait, or the trait she respected most. And she would always talk about it being like a mafia thing. Like, she had some kind of sick fantasy that her and her dad were part of organized crime, and they weren't. And I always felt like
a lot of, was she Sicilian at all? Because a lot of Sicilians have that fantasy.
No, she was Syrian and Greek.
Okay. Well,
so Mediterranean.
There's organized crime everywhere. Maybe her dad worked for the government.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, man. I don't know what their deal is, and I don't like to think about them too much. But it just always – I always felt like loyalty was a bad thing. In that sense, if you take it to that extreme, to where you're going to stick with somebody even if he's a dirty murderer who always, you know, breaks the non-aggression principle.
Yeah, I mean,
it's generally bad thing. Why?
If a man beats his wife – she should leave him, you know?
Yes, exactly.
She shouldn't stand by her man. And I feel the same with governments. You know, if you can't be an Everhawk and be a libertarian, man. That's
no. I don't think you can be an Anyhawk.
Yeah. So speaking of governments not liking the abused wife to leave, I read recently that the IRS is now sending you owe us money, tax back taxes letters to people who were born in America but haven't lived here their whole life. Like, you know, their parents were Dutch and were in America on business and had their kid on vacation by accident and, you know, went two weeks later, went back to Holland and never lived here. The IRS is sending people like that letters. Or, you know, one of the parents was an American citizen, so they have dual citizenship, and they've never lived here. The IRS is sending those people letters saying, you know, overseas, saying, you owe us back taxes for your whole life.
That is completely insane. And to me, it sort of breaks down all those people who brag about some kind of social contract or say that that's the reason. Because these are people who did not benefit from any of that. They weren't born here geographically. They didn't go drive on our roads, guys. They didn't go to our schools, as you are so fond of saying. They didn't benefit from our tax structure or anything like that.
And they probably didn't even, you know, Americans would say, well, at least you could get to say you're an American citizen. Most of those people would not in the current climate in America, in the current climate in the world. It's gotten a little better since they put in the cool black tyrant instead of the Texan white tyrant. But like, I was traveling Europe during when Bush was in showing my movies, and people, I was telling people I was Canadian so they wouldn't beat me up, man. I mean, people were really, they hate America. A lot of them, I mean, some of them can tell the difference, you know. I mean, it's like, look, the guy traveling, I'm traveling the countryside, you know, on trains with my backpack, I'm not the guy who's sending the missiles. I'm not the guy who's making the decisions. Yep. But
well, there's a post I put on my Facebook wall from Marjan Satrapi, who's actually a Persian graphic novelist. She did a thing called Persepolis. And she has this quote where she says, you know, basically, I have more in common with the average American or the average person in any country than I have in common with any government official in my country. Mm-hmm. And it's probably the same where you live, which is true. I have more in common with an average person in Singapore, China, Ghana, anywhere than I do with whoever's sitting in Congress right now.
Yeah, because you're not an Everhawk.
Well, because the money I make is actual, I get it from productive work, you know. I produce a good or service in the world that people buy, and that's how I make my money. Whereas somebody sitting in D.C., they steal from other people at the point of gun, and that's how they make their money.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com.
You know, another thing I've heard about the IRS is that when people decide that they don't want to have dual citizenship anymore and go to the American consulate in whatever country, they live in to, you know, renounce their American citizenship that they never had any reason to have other than an accident of birth.
Yeah.
The more and more the officials that you have to deal with when you do that, the Americans at those consulates berate you and threaten you and say like, oh, this sounds like tax evasion to me. You know, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like a last ditch, try to scare you.
You know, what would you do though? I probably just wouldn't, I would just ignore it. I'd be like, really? Send a drone then.
Don't give me any ideas.
Well, when will they start doing that, you know? They're already trying to keep you from leaving the country for not paying your taxes. Now they're saying even if you never lived here, you must pay us taxes.
When Romney becomes president.
Ah,
and what's with all these millionaires? Like, the ones that are, like, Stephen King recently said, you know, and he's a multi-millionaire, and he's the author Stephen King, and he's like, you know, gave a press conference and was like, rich people should pay their taxes, and if they don't want to pay more taxes, they should F off.
Okay, F off. That would be my choice. I'll just F off. Yes.
There was some other billionaire that did that recently. Who was it?
Well, that's been Warren Buffett's thing for years.
See, I think, though, that those two people might be, like, getting some kind of payment for doing it. Like, maybe they'll get to...
get a tax break for it.
They'll get to still use their offshore accounts when nobody else can or something. But, I don't know. Stephen King is a true believer socialist, I think. He named his kid after some socialist labor leader.
Huh. Speaking of socialist labor, did you hear that the Obama administration or the Obama campaign's campaign slogan now, instead of hope and change, it's forward?
Forward. Which has a long history of names of socialist newsletters throughout the world.
It's got its own wiki entry for Forward as the generic name for socialist newsletters.
But I think even aside from that, just as it's a bad slogan, it basically means let's slog through this crap and hope there's something at the like hope and change were better bullshit than forward.
Maybe, but I feel like MSNBC has been fluffing forward in people's minds. Like, they've got their slogan lean forward, you know, because they try to say Fox leans to the right, and so their whole thing is we're above that, we're gonna lean forward with our lesbian hosts and stuff like that. And you know, I feel like for progressives, for some reason, that's what they think. They think they're constantly progressing towards the future by making the world safe for social justice. They just don't think about what
they're
actually doing.
They call themselves progressives. They
think
they're, they think we're about 35 laws away from perfection.
That number keeps going up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it used to be 3, but yeah. So I've had a weird day, man. I had like 2 people I never wanted to talk to again contact me who I haven't talked to in like 10 years. In 24 hours, 2 of them contacted me. One was the chick that said she was a libertarian who loved that she voted for Obama.
She loved that she voted? I thought she was begrudging it nowadays.
No. She was like, yeah, I think he'll be a good change. It'll be nice to have a younger, hipper black guy in there. I don't know if she said that, but she was really psyched about it. And then the other is a guy I used to play music with who's like one of the few true sociopaths I've ever had a lot of experience with. And then I keep blocking these people on email addresses, and then they find the email address that isn't blocked. You know, it's kind of like stalkerish. I don't know. They don't look at it that way. And the guy gave me this like half-assed apology and said, you know, if you need an apology, I guess you've got it, or something like that. Like, that's not a real amends.
No,
that's not
that
contrite. That's not, I'll change my ways. That's,
yeah. If you got your panties in a wad, I'll pretend like I care.
Yeah. Yeah. But,
do you still have your panties in a wad about this dude?
I just never want to speak to him again. But I wrote him back and was like, okay, what?
Yeah.
I'll hear what he has to say. I haven't talked to him in like 9 years. And, you know, I just want to make sure he's not moving to Wyoming or anything, because then I'll have to move to Utah.
Utah's a nice place, man. I mean, there's more of a state than in Wyoming, so that's bad. But it's prettier than Wyoming. At least it's prettier in more places. I don't know if anything's as pretty as Northwest Wyoming. But
so then what else happened in 24 hours? I was working on this project with this dude. It's a film project. He does not understand what it means to be directed and, you know, was fighting over one tiny, 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 tiny little thing. And we both just kind of said, F it. And then this thing that really kind of hankled me was reading this email, or this, it was a blog post. I can't read it or say who it was, but I showed it to you. It's from a libertarian hero of mine, kind of someone who forged a lot of what I'm at now. And it's really negative. It's really like, you know, we're effed. In 10 years, people like Alex Jones are going to be in prison or dead. You know, more people would rather show up in America for a football game than for Ron Paul. Things are going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. I tried to do what I could, but no one cared. F you, you know, kind of like F it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a guy I've taken a lot of like inspiration from his positivity before. And this was like, whoa, fearless leader is upset.
The thing about it, though, and I can understand the sentiment. I think we all feel like that sometimes, but this particular libertarian hero is not very known for being the most in touch kind of guy, at least with in touch with the way society's feeling at the moment. He's kind of a hermit, wouldn't you say?
No, he's into privacy.
He's into privacy. Yeah. Is that a euphemism for hermit?
Well, no, because a hermit means you don't leave your house. This guy leaves his house.
He does.
He just, you know, unlisted phone, emails not readily available, you know, kind of a... Kind of like I am in a way, like, but I answer more emails, I think. Well, he's been doing it longer, and he's probably sick of it. But, you know, kind of one-way communication with the world. I'm a hermit. I leave my property about twice a week for about an hour at a time and, you know, leave town probably 5 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
No, well, this guy's always out hunting and hanging out and traveling and doing all sorts of stuff.
That's true. But I guess the way I feel is it feels all lost in the sense that the government is more powerful than ever. That's very true. I will cede that territory anytime in an argument. The government is bigger, more powerful than ever in the history of the world. It has more specialized weapons, more ways of killing us, controlling us, spying on us. Very true. But I also think the libertarian movement or the freedom movement is also stronger and more widespread than it's ever been.
Yeah.
So whether it's enough to counter the state in the end, I don't know. And I kind of feel like the end of your Anarchy Gumbo podcast with Molyneux really shed light on it more than anything else I've heard. You know, they're going full speed ahead with statism as much as they can. Well, I think we are too, and all we can do is keep doing that. But I see hope. I mean,
yeah, and you know, Molyneux's solution is education through the internet. This guy, he who cannot be named, solution is, you know, a battle rifle behind every suburban fence.
Well, Molyneux's new thing is,
I mean,
is
the other guy is so,
he thinks that the way the world changes is through children. He thinks we raise a generation of kids that are better than all the statist kids, and the statist kids just naturally starve to death when the state fails. I'm putting words into his mouth, but you know, basically the idea is the more successful kids are ours. They follow the non-aggression principle and they have better lives, and then they have more kids, and eventually humanity just evolves socially towards freedom.
Well, I think in a bigger way, Molyneux's answer is education of the mind, and he who cannot be named's answer is education with riflemanship. And you know, those two camps don't mix much and they don't know a lot about each other. I think that's one reason we resonate with people, is because we're into both. I mean, there are people that are into both. There's, you know, some Free State New Hampshire people, but the Free State New Hampshire people, a lot of them are, they carry pistols, but they're not really rifle people. And I'm actually surprised with how many people there are in Free State Project in New Hampshire who are not gun people. Ian is not a gun person. Kelly Voluntarist is not a gun person. A lot of them, I mean, I get the impression that there's 10,000 people walking around open carrying and slam dancing there, but that's not true. It's like there's 20 of them and they all make YouTube videos.
That's not true, but accuracy in the media told me it was true, Michael.
But it's really like 20 of them do it and all make YouTube videos of each other. So
yeah,
it looks like a lot.
I feel like I should... I want to have not only my pistol on me, I want it to be open and for people to not ask me questions about it. For it just that's the way it works. Everybody carries openly. And I want to have a rifle on my back and a shotgun on my back in an X so I can grab whichever one I need at the time.
That guy I interviewed, his name's escaping me right now, the ex-NRA guy that started the Guns and Weed Lobby. He lives in New Hampshire. He has 140 guns, and he's adamantly against people open carrying.
Why?
He came from the NRA, man. I don't know, because he thinks that you should hide your rights. I don't know.
That it gives gun people a bad name or something.
Yeah, I think that's
it. Hi, I'm Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax-eater conglomerate.
I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmiths. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmiths. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kitties.
Available in 4 strengths and 10 delicious flavors. Reds, Classics, Turkish, Menthol, Strawberry, Cherry, Vanilla, Coffee, Minty Mint, and Cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com. Use coupon code FREEDOMFIEND to get 25% off your order. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Check out the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night. The Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com. Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
6 drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Rolling.
Fiends?
So, fiends.
Fiends.
Phone.
Fiends phone.
Fiends phones.
So, yeah, that whole thing with fearless leader, who cannot be named, basically... just really
was it like a dump in your Cheerios or what
it
happened?
It was like a dump in my Cheerios, man. I don't know.
I guess I don't feel like all is lost yet, but I'm young. Young people always feel like they're invincible, so I kind of project that onto the liberty movement. Like, you know, hey, they'll try to put us in FEMA camps and we just won't go, and then they'll run out of money and give up. Yay.
Yeah. Well, really what they'll do, I really don't see the mass internment of dissidents. What I see is select high profile, don't F with us, destroying the lives of a few people here and there to have a chilling effect on everyone else.
Well, that's the way it's worked throughout history, right? I mean, that's what the communists did. They put all the intellectual elite and the people in the media, the people who could protest, you know, on intellectual basis.
That was bigger. That was mass herding of people into camps and deaths.
Ah, okay. I see.
You think it'll be a select few?
As in, 20, 25 people?
I mean, well, they do it all the time. I mean, how many people who do drugs get raided by Fed goons with concussion grenades and AR-15s? Not many, like less than 1%.
Yeah.
But that's enough to scare some people into, well, I don't really want to do this. You know, but it doesn't stop it, but it does have a chilling effect. I think that at some point there will be some blogger or podcaster who's talking libertarian stuff who they will just nail to the wall on something.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it's they used an Aerosmith song in their podcast and they're considered pirates because of it or something.
Yeah. And they take down LouRockwell.com or something.
Yeah.
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 Well,
the fiends will still
be. The fiends will just use carrier pigeons. We're backed up.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you. So I told you about, you know, I got a new router and I went to add it in my wireless, you know, on my laptop. Mm-hmm. And I went to the show networks in your area. And there was a network, one of my neighbors or somebody in my, you know, reach, you know, quarter block radius or whatever of what I can see. There was a network called CIA.
Nice. You know, it'd be funny if it were actually the CIA and that's their cover. They hide in plain sight. Yeah.
They wouldn't.
I know they wouldn't, no. But that'd be hilarious.
No, the CIA would either monitor you remotely because they control the internet. Or if they really needed to do it in your neighborhood, they would either park a van out front and it would have some innocuous name like, you know, Casper Kurt or something like that, or they would just rent the house next door to you at taxpayer expense and put a fake family in there and use that as their IP address so they wouldn't come up as a government IP.
Or they just pay your neighbor to spy on you.
Or they just put spyware on your neighbor, or they would just seize your seize your neighbor's house for having a bag of weed.
Yeah. Or they would just look up your extra census information that some people get sent. I don't think I did fill that out. But yeah, it asks for like when you leave for work, when you come home from work, how often you work, what days you work.
Yeah.
To basically know your whole schedule if you fill that stuff out.
Well, then they just come in your house and put some invisible spyware on your computer. You know, I don't know if I told you this or not. I had a friend in San Francisco that was a locksmith, and I got locked out of my house one time, and he's like, oh, I'll get you in for free. And he goes to his truck, and he brings out this tool that looked like a cordless power drill that had a weird, instead of having drills, it had some weird ending on it, and it had like some LED settings and computer, you know, readouts on it. He turned it on. He stuck this probe in my lock, pulled the trigger on it like a drill, and it went and it opened my door. My door opened in like 2 seconds.
Nice.
There are locks that you can get that defeat that, but most people don't have them and they cost a lot extra.
Yeah.
And now if you have one,
it seems like you could do it to where you'd have like a deadbolt that was like remote controlled. Yeah. You know,
and I'll bet you now that if you buy the locks that defeat that, it gets you on a government watch list.
Probably. You know what? In the future, there won't even be a list. You know, once they're finished with that NSA site in Utah, I bet they just watch all of us. You know, there's no list. The long list is the whole country, pretty much.
Well, there is a value to a list from a mathematical standpoint.
As far as resources they put into it goes. Yeah.
You know, I'm not talking about any of the morality of anything. I'm talking about systems analysis here. There is a value to having things sorted into piles. And I've heard that right now the DHS watch list is about 1 million people. So it's a little under 1% of Americans. Actually, I heard that a couple years ago. It's probably double or triple that now. Mm. But, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Either way, it doesn't seem hard for the government to keep tabs on us anymore. But at the same time, going back to this thing where all is not lost, I mean, it's not hard for us to communicate between each other. It's not hard. The cost of teaching people about liberty is lower than it's ever been.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have a worldwide talk show that also plays on some radio that, I mean, we're probably using between us $4,000 worth of equipment, but most of it's not equipment we just bought for this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if we both were using a $150 Zoom H2 and a $300 laptop, we could still do it, and it would sound almost as good.
Yep, yep.
You know,
and it could reach just as many people.
Yeah,
it might take a little more work to sweeten the audio and to get everything working, but it still work. People do it.
And if other people want to do this, I have a bunch of blog posts on michaelwdean.com about how to do it.
Yeah.
And the link on the freedomfiends.com site of how we record is good.
Yeah. Although it has changed a little bit, and I think you've updated it some, but...
Yeah. I think that anybody who wants to podcast and doesn't know anything about it should read that whole how we record article from beginning to end, even if they're not going to do all the advanced stuff we do, because it's kind of... you know, if I were being paid and had time, I'd probably organize it better or rewrite it now that we've added to it to where it's in sections of, you know, basic setup, medium setup, advanced setup. But it's not like that. Mm-hmm. But there are things actually scattered throughout the advanced stuff that would help you with basic stuff. So read the whole thing and think about where you want to grow eventually.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's just it, you know? That's how we put our balls to the wall. That's how we go hard in the paint, is we convince people to firmly understand and grasp the concept of liberty. And then I don't think it goes anywhere beyond that. I think people will take it upon themselves to, you know, say things at work like, well, I'm an anarchist. Or they'll say, well, are you voting for Romney or Obama? And they'll be like, psh, it's the same thing. I'm voting for neither. And
that's so square.
And conversations blossom from there. And then some people will grab a microphone and just spill their whole philosophy to the world.
I think when people say, who are you voting for? You should respond, that's so square, and walk away.
Vote? Who would vote? Yeah.
Dude, that's like saying, which child do you want to molest? Right, it's not quite that. But
and then,
it's
of course,
close.
There's that meme going around now that's, I'm voting for nobody because nobody will raise taxes or
that's
nobody
old.
Will lower
that's,
taxes.
That's old.
That kind of thing.
It's old, and people who vote still pass it around because they think it's funny.
right.
Yeah. Here's a good review of us from podfeed.com, a site that syndicates us without us even knowing it happened. I like this review. I don't know who it's from. It says, great and optimistic. This podcast differs from many others, which are also discussing politics, libertarianism, voluntarism, minarchism, and anarchism. Hosts are funny and always find a lighter topic, which keeps balance of the balance of the podcast and ease the optimistic approach to our future.
Nice, nice. Yeah. I think you have to have an optimistic approach to the future, because if you're a pessimist, you give up. Like when
I guess that's why it really bugged me when he who cannot be named wrote that post of like, we're all fucked, because that's a guy who got me into this.
Right.
You know,
right.
That's a guy whose writings made me go, huh?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Maybe there is a libertarian paradise waiting for me in Wyoming. Oops. Did I just say who it is?
we just won't go there anymore, but I feel like, okay, you might not win, no matter how, you know, being the most optimistic in the world isn't going to guarantee you a win, but I think you can guarantee failure if you're not optimistic. If you say all is lost, what's the point? You know,
your answer to is this guy a hermit is, well, he's enough of a privacy freak that I can't say who he is or read this essay because he wrote it on a members only website and he would be pissed if I read it. So
right.
That's not someone who's out there on the internet. So that's a hermit these days. If you're selective about who sees you on the internet, you're a digital hermit. He's a digital hermit.
Digital hermit. There you go. But my point is, if you say all is lost, all might as well be lost. The minute you start to believe that there's no way for us to beat the state, then the state's won. And also, that's what the state wants you to think. That's what they go through. That's what they do to indoctrinate you throughout your whole school age. They try to make you feel like, well, the government's this all-powerful thing that's always existed and always made things better, and there's no point in fighting against it. And they teach you that, you know, on a practical level too. You know, if you don't wear your belt, you go to ISS, which is basically like prison. They tell you if you do drugs, you go to prison. They send people to prison. They try to make you feel like there's nothing you can do to opt out of the state or to fight the state. You know, that old saying, you can't fight City Hall. we have to not believe it. Stop believing in the Santa Claus, you know.
I'm riffing in my brain on a Dead Kennedys line in the song "Let's Lynch the Landlord." The line is, it's from the point of view of the landlord. He says, "I'm doubling your rent because your building's condemned. You're going to help me fight City Hall."
Nice. But
worms.
Yeah.
So why does this cast sound better possibly than anything we've ever done? What did we do today?
Well, that's a little bit of putting the cart before the horse. We don't know if it's going to sound excellent yet, but we're actually, we took a hint from Crisscross, the famous 90s children's rap group, and we've decided to turn our microphones backwards.
Did he do that?
No, they just wore their clothes backwards. Okay. But we're going backwards today. Michael was like, you know, you can record on your ribbon mic backwards. I'm going to see if it sounds better. And he flipped his around and said it sounded better. I did the same with mine. It sounded better. Sounded clearer. I don't know what the deal is.
Yep.
Maybe at the factory they accidentally put the labeling on the backside.
No. The backside, did you think it sounded brighter or darker?
Brighter.
Yeah. The thing is, ribbon microphones are bidirectional. The front and back have the same sound pickup capabilities. Mm-hmm. It's inherent in the construction of a ribbon mic.
Right.
And they generally have the darker side labeled as front because with ribbon microphones, people expect a warmer sound. But I think that the back has warmth and more presence, too.
Yeah, I think so. And then I was thinking maybe it's like a mattress. You have to flip it every now and then. Since it's just a strip of corrugated thin foil. So maybe you speak at the front side, you know, for a couple months and then just flip it over and speak at the back side.
No, that's not it. But you do need to store them upright. I store them in a little case upright.
Yeah, I put mine in the box that came in upright just because it's padded with foam. Yep. And I figure if it's good enough to ship it that way, it's good enough to store it that way.
So you ever seen Lawrence of Arabia?
No, and I'm not super familiar with the story. I mean, I know it was a British guy who was out in Arabia around World War I, but I don't really know what his commission from the government was or if he even had one.
Well, it's based on a real person. It's historically overall accurate. You know, there's a few historians have taken to task little aspects of it, but it is pretty much it's considered one of the greatest movies ever made by every reviewer ever, which I never really love those movies that people say are the best movies, you know, like Citizen Kane, Midnight Cowboy. I think I don't know. I don't love them that much. Like I watched half of this with my wife and then went in the other room and watched Entourage instead, which like is heresy for a filmmaker. It's like you don't go watch pop HBO television instead of Lawrence of Arabia, but I do.
At least you weren't watching Jersey Shore.
You can subscribe to Freedom Fiends via the RSS link on the top right of any page. It's orange and marked follow. Or you can subscribe via email at the subscribe by email link at the top of the right sidebar on any page. It's a little bit below the search field. You'll need to respond to a one-time confirmation email, but after that, you will only receive an email each time a new episode posts. The Freedom Fiends respect your privacy. We will not spam you and will not sell, rent, or share your email address. And you are free to unsubscribe at any time.
Yeah. Entourage is like the smarter guys who got out of Jersey Shore.
Ah, okay.
Kind of.
Okay.
It's about four dudes from Queens. It's based on Mark Wahlberg and his friends who actually came from Philly, I think. But
from back when Mark Wahlberg was Marky Mark.
Yeah. This takes place in like right after that and when he got into movies, kind of. But it's different people's names, but it's him and his friends. Anyway, Lawrence of Arabia, like I didn't know history well enough to know this. All I know about World War I, all I was taught in grade school and high school was that it was started by the assassination of Francis Ferdinand, the Archduke of Prussia or something that doesn't exist anymore. But it was interesting. The UK got the Arabs to fight the Turks. It looked almost exactly like the US getting the Afghans to fight the Russians to me, how they did it. I mean, the weaponry was different, but It looked really similar.
Right. Okay, because that was when the Ottoman Empire still existed. Of course, being the Turks.
Right, and they sent – Lawrence was the guy sent in to get the Arabs to fight for – you know, and it was kind of funny. It's like I was walking in. I watched an hour of it. It's like 4 hours long. It's beautifully photographed. It's a stunning look movie. It's from like 1961 or something. And you know, I watched an hour of it. Then I got bored, and I ended up watching the last hour of it. But the 2 hours in the middle, I was in the other room doing stuff and watching Entourage and setting up my wireless cameras. And I would wander in and look at it for a while, and then come back out. And the one scene I went in was like near the third act was like Lawrence speaking in Arabia to this group of Arabs like after they'd won. And as he walks out, all these Arabs run over to him with like petitions, like things on paper they're handing him because he's the new, you know, like. And I said to DJ, like, oh, so now it's a fledgling democracy. England has brought their fledgling democracy. And she said, they tried.
So that's how it's portrayed, like he was liberating the Arabs from the oppressive rule of the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah, and I just look at it like, you know, he was the imperialist going in and getting people to fight their battles,
right?
For their, you know, right. England's battles for their,
which seems to make a lot more sense to me.
Yeah, but it really reminded, you know, it's like UK getting the Arabs to fight the Turks. It just looked like the US getting the Afghans to fight the Russians to me later.
Yeah, yeah, or any US involvement. Although I guess now. Maybe that's the lesson the Pentagon will try to take away is screw this, sending Americans to die. We'll start, you know, just using drones and trying to get our own men on the inside to fight our battles for us.
And control the internet and bring the internet. You know, one thing that the CIA does in places like where the Arab Spring was happened was when the country would cut off the internet and cell phones to keep the people from organizing, the CIA went in with something called Internet in a Box, which is like a big suitcase that's got a satellite receiver in it, transceiver, and hooks up to like a powerful wireless modem that's unencrypted. And they would just sneak into a hotel room in the neighborhoods where those were happening, send five people into, you know, different neighborhoods of the city and set those up so people could have internet.
Of course, this is only when it suits their needs. I mean,
right. It's not a freedom fighting thing.
No.
And actually, I think the image I'm going to use for this podcast is this meme that's been going around. It's a picture of Congress, of the Capitol building. And it says, wants China and Iran to not censor their internet, introduces a bill to censor our internet.
Yeah, exactly. Which sort of sums up the hypocrisy of the American state pretty succinctly, you know. It's bad when China oppresses its people, but as long as we have a democracy in America, we can oppress people as much as we damn well please, because people voted for it.
Yeah, I mean, I really think that that cartoon and the cartoon of the soldier reading the letter from his dad, those two tell you more about America than like 12 years of public high school.
Yeah. Totally.
You know, really, it's like that's what school should be. You teach the kid to read, you teach him to do math, and then you have him stare at those cartoons every day for a week, and then he's graduating.
Nice. You tell him to go get a damn job.
Yeah.
Start bringing in some money.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to read this letter some stranger named Lisa wrote me. Well, I actually mentioned this on the cast, but I didn't play the snippet of Stefan Molyneux, which I will insert here. She says, "Hi, Michael. I enjoyed listening to your recent interview with Stefan Molyneux and the discussion about BDSM. Recently, I was listening to Red Ice radio interview with Stefan, in which Stefan speaks about the non-aggression principle in spanking children. He then includes an exception about spanking among consenting adults, followed by a little chuckle. I think Stefan included that exception as a result of your conversation. Bravo, Michael. Take care, Lisa."
Nice.
Okay, I'm going to insert it right here.
Okay. Excellent.
We would have to accept that. We would have to accept that spanking is wrong. Spanking is the initiation of force, spanking against children. Consenting adults, that's another matter, but against children.
Yeah.
You like that?
Yeah, I totally like that. I like that whole interview you did with Molyneux. And, you know, the fact that Molyneux has incorporated that into some of his spiel, I think it's very... I'm very proud of you. Huh? I'll put it that way.
I am too. And I like that he was teachable about something he felt he was sure about. That shows an open mind.
Of course he is. And I think that that speaks very well to his integrity and makes me trust him more because, you know, he came across new information and was able to digest it without having to really be hypocritical about anything.
I have a saying, as soon as you stop being teachable, you start getting old.
Ha. Oh, yeah, that's very true. And, you know, that is the problem with, you know, demographically with a place like America. And it's also why I think all is not lost, as he who cannot be named says, because, you know what? He who cannot be named might be 100% right if we were stuck in this moment in time, if the people who are above 50 or 60 weren't doomed to die in a few decades, then yeah, you might be right. Those people are unteachable. They're never going to love Ron Paul. They're never going to love liberty. They're never going to want the state to stop taking things away from other people to give to them. But people my age, people your age, you know, obviously in a decreasing fashion as you get older and older, don't want to have it any other way. We don't see any kind of justification for the state to take our stuff, or we don't care and we're apathetic about it, which means that if you are apathetic about it, you're more teachable than somebody who's passionate about it in the wrong way. At least I think so. So I think that that's where the hope is as well, is in the teenagers. As James Davis said, you know, there's evolutionary and historical evidence that says part of the reason why teenagers are so rebellious and do call old people on their BS is because that's built into the species to keep us from stagnating, to keep us dynamic so that we don't. So we aren't doomed to make the same societal mistakes that seem to be plaguing us. If something isn't working, then the youth will call BS on it and eventually change things.
Was he the one that said that every major leap forward of societies came from really young people, like late teens, early 20s?
Yeah, but I think he might have been quoting somebody else, and obviously it was a bit more nuanced than that. But that seemed to be the gist that I got from it. And, you know, historically it does make sense, and that's been something that's been brought up before, even by mainstream historians, that, you know, countries are more likely to have a revolution when you have younger people. You know, that's when the revolution in Iran happened in 1979. It was students. It was people younger than me. It was people in their 20s.
The civil rights movement largely came from young people.
Yep, civil rights movement.
The anti-war movement largely came from young people. I wonder if anti-slavery movement largely came from young people. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, but you know, I honestly wouldn't doubt it at all.
Probably because young people didn't have enough money to own slaves, so they'd be against it.
That's another good point, too, is the young people usually don't get the benefits out of the status quo that the older people do. The older people have been living under that current establishment or whatever current political system they're living under, and they've tailored their lives economically to a way that they can benefit from the way things work as they are. And obviously, older people are less inclined to give up their piece of the pie. They're less inclined to change. They've already spent years or decades figuring out how to make money in that society. So they don't want to have to start from scratch. They don't want to have to rethink or innovate. Whereas young people haven't made their way in the world yet. And so they see the world and they think, you know, I guess I could do what my dad did or do what these older people are doing, but it doesn't seem right. And, you know, the economy collapsed for Uncle Bob and he's screwed now. So what do I do? And a lot of us feel like changing the world is part of the way we can make the world a place where we feel comfortable succeeding in.
Worms.
Have you been looking for a safe, scenic, and inspiring place to live free? We chose Wyoming. Wyoming is the home of Free State Wyoming and the personal choice of Boston Tea Party, as well as the setting of his book, Moulin LaBaye. Bring the family and stop by for the 2012 Free State Wyoming Jamboree for 4 days of camping, shooting, and barbecue. There'll be trading, hiking, a raffle, and plenty of activities for the kids. Admission is free for those under 18. Entrance and 4 days camping is $15. It's only $15 more for the barbecue and beer on Saturday. Visit freestatewyoming.org. There's even a one-day handgun course led by Boston. The handgun course is extra. The Jamboree is June 28th through July 1st in the beautiful Black Hills of Wyoming. Join us to explore our favorite area of the country and see if our choice might become your choice. That's freestatewyoming.org. See you there! Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiends show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.FM streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned.
So, Nima.
Yeah, Michael.
We have a special fiend sourcing project that involves Austin, Texas. If yes. There's anyone in Austin, Texas listening, send us an email at talkback@freedomfiends.com.
Yep. We got big things planned, and we want y'all to be a part of it.
And they're peace-loving and natural.
Yeah, I guess they are. It is natural, isn't it? I didn't even think of it that way.
Yeah,
it's organic.
It's a radio thing. And, you know, I was thinking about, you asked me, why am I into radio so much? And I was thinking the other day, something that really got me about it was growing up in the Cold War and hearing about and seeing documentaries about the Berlin Wall.
Because the Berlin Wall couldn't stop radio waves.
Right. Yeah. It was illegal in East Berlin to own a radio, but people had them and built them so they could listen to Western stuff from the other side of the wall. Like, you know, one thing...
Kind of like how it's illegal to download pirated stuff from BitTorrent, but that doesn't mean people don't do it.
Yeah, and there's a corollary there. And it's like in... I mean, there's this thing, it still exists, it's called Radio Free Europe. It's an American, I think it's run by the army, it's a propaganda thing, and Radio Free Europe often would have transmitters at the edge of a boundary where they couldn't have programming like that in the other side of the boundary, like the Berlin Wall. And a lot of it wasn't even... like propaganda. They weren't saying like America is great, you leave your communist masters, you know. It was more like they played rock and roll music and, you know, talked about the weather in America and stuff, like really low key propaganda.
Yeah.
And it was
kind of a look at what you're missing kind of a thing.
Yeah. And kind of a we'll give you hope. And it wasn't only done by governments, like, you know, people in West Berlin set up their own transmitters and did stuff like this. And to me, the idea of, you know, something you can build for $50 or back then $5 that you can reach people who are unreachable, you know, on the other side. I mean, Berlin was so fucked up. It was like after World War II, you know, the winners divided up the empire. And part of what they did was Russia, the Soviet Union, got part of the city of Berlin, which is beautiful, long-running city in Europe, in Germany, and they put a fucking wall around it with German shepherds and guards with machine guns and barbed wire and a trench and landmines. And
how obviously disgusting is it to know that's a society that's so completely controlled by the state is not what people want, so much so that you had to force the people to stay.
Yeah, and it divided families. I mean, there were, like, you know, mothers and fathers with their kids living on the other side of the wall. Some people tried to escape. A lot of them got killed. A few people actually escaped. There's a really good documentary. I forget the name of it, but it's a bunch of students. Again, you know, the young people taking the charge. A bunch of college students spent like a year digging a tunnel under it. And a couple of them got out, and a few of them got murdered in the process. And I was in Germany on reunification day in 1990 or 91. I was there playing with my band. Yeah.
Awesome.
Which was a big patriotic celebration. It was like 4th of July times 10. I was in Schweinfurt, not Berlin. But
Here's the silly contradiction, though. If it weren't for American foreign policy and involvement in both World War One and World War Two, that situation would have never existed in the first place.
I know.
I mean, Roosevelt basically gave that to Uncle Joe, you know, Stalin. He called him Uncle Joe affectionately.
Yeah.
And that was basically guaranteed to him. And also, you know, if it weren't for American involvement in World War One, the Bolshevik Revolution wouldn't have succeeded. You know, the imperial powers in Russia were using their army for something else. So they left the capital and all the internal stuff open so that the Bolsheviks, and they had to try multiple times, but eventually they gained control of the state in Russia.
And America refused entry to a lot of Jews who were trying to escape Hitler.
So again, it's the same thing the government always does, is create a problem and then pose as the savior to the problem that it created.
Yep. So if you want to help us liberate Austin, if you live in Austin.
Austin could use some liberating, man. I'm excited to be moving back to Texas and living in a city that's as weird and awesome as Austin. With it actually does have a community of you know, freedom-minded people and libertarians. And Texas sort of does have a tradition of being a bit more rugged and independent than other places. But man, they've got drones flying over the skies. Last time I was there,
the drone star state, man.
The drone star state. I didn't even think about that. You come up with that, or is that a thing that you've heard before?
I didn't come up with that, and I did not come up with the drone industrial complex either.
Okay, drone star state. Yeah, I could see that. But you know, last time I was there, it was before the drones were flying. But their new police chief, man, who I guess got into power right after I left. He's a nutcase, man, and there's cops everywhere. Like, you drive up and down 35, and there's literally, at least when I was last there almost 2 years ago now, you couldn't go more than a few hundred yards without seeing a cop, just waiting for something. Waiting for somebody to not have a tag on or to be going slightly too fast, and they just escalate it from there.
You know, it's kind of interesting, the stated purpose of the people who blew up the World Trade Center was to get American troops to come fight them on their own territory. That was one of the stated purposes. Mm-hmm. One of the stated purposes was not to get America to impose tyranny, but it happened. But it was the unintended consequence.
Yeah, that was the cherry on their sundae, I guess.
I really feel like a lot of American politicians liked it too. I mean, I've heard rumors that the Patriot Act was written and sitting in a drawer somewhere waiting for something.
Yeah, I've heard rumors of that too. I think more likely it was just a few bits of it, you know, or maybe more than a few bits of it, but lots of very tyrannical police statey things that they were like, oh, well, hey, now we can do that, and we can do that, and we can do that, and we can wiretap, and look at all these great things. So I think there were definitely concepts that had probably been thought up in a think tank somewhere. You know, I don't think it existed in its pure form.
By Cass Sunstein. Did you see that video of the guy trying to talk to Cass Sunstein?
Trying to talk to him about, like, Liberty guy trying to talk to him, or what?
Yeah, you know that whole thing that I was freaking out about the last time I was depressed about We're All Fucked, like, mm-hmm. three weeks ago? it was based on me staying up one night in the middle of the night and reading this 25-page white paper by Cass Sunstein that he wrote back during the Obama administration about dealing with...
You mean back
with,
during the Bush administration?
Yeah, thank you. I thought it was weird the first time you did that. Now I do it all the time.
Happens all the time, yeah.
But, he... And he's probably going to be the next Supreme Court judge. He is who Obama's going to put in there.
Oh, really? Yeah. I was not aware of that.
Yeah. And he wrote this thing called Conspiracy Theories, and it was about like what the government should do about people saying things that contradict the government. And it had suggestions, everything from like cutting off the internet to putting fake people on there to pose, paying people to pose the right opinion, to, you know, jailing bloggers, to having a license to be on the internet.
Ugh.
And I was freaking out about that. And then I forgot about it. And then somebody went to, I think, I don't know if it was some it was Harvard Law School or Yale Law School, maybe. You know, I think it was his alma mater. And he was speaking to students there as the, you know, oh, here's our wonderful speaker for the day, this famous guy who graduated here.
The keynote speaker.
Yeah, the keynote speaker, you know, speaking to about 150 students, law students. And one of the people there, I don't know if he's a law student or not, it's on We Are Change website, you know, stood up and said, you know, 9 years ago, you wrote this paper called Conspiracy Theories, in which you suggested censoring the internet and paying government bloggers to pretend to be not government bloggers and infiltrate conspiracy groups. How do you feel about this now? And he said something like, well, I've written a lot of policy papers for a lot of different people. It's what I do. You know, basically gave this half-assed answer that said something like, I don't remember that particular paper. I may or may not have written it. And, you know, I don't know if I agree with it. I write a lot of stuff for a lot of people. And then the kid tried to, like, chase him afterwards and nail him down on it again. And the guy ignored him, and Cass Sunstein's bodyguard stepped in. And then when Cass Sunstein was leaving, the guy followed him out when he was catching a taxi, fearless idiot was catching a taxi, and was hammering him about it and saying, like, you know, a lot of people have compared you to Goebbels for this, which is quite a thing to say to a Jew, but he said it. And, you know,
quite Cass a thing Sunstein to say for looked, a Jew. That should Cass, be the name of an album.
What? Quite a thing to say to a Jew? Yeah. Cass Sunstein just, like, ignored him and looked worried and got into the a cab and went away.
Wow. That's I'm going to awesome, post that. That's a great thing to do to statist. I think that's what we need to do all the time to statist always.
Well, it's probably illegal now because I'm assuming his bodyguard was a Secret Service guy because he's like Obama's right-hand man. Mm-hmm, and it's now illegal to protest in the presence of the Secret Service. So they didn't use this guy as a test case, but they will sooner or later. We were talking before this about how, like, we don't really think they're going to inter everybody in camps. We think they're going to go for select people they can prosecute and fuck with to get a chilling effect. Talk about that.
I think it's going to backfire on them, though. I mean, and I think they've always known this, that they have to toe the line between making somebody a martyr and silencing them.
Yeah.
I feel like if they go after, you know, and that's why I don't think they'll go after, you know, somebody like Lou Rockwell, who's so ubiquitous. I think that they'll start somewhere in the middle, you know, somebody who's known.
Us.
us, maybe. Yeah. Hopefully not. But I think they do want there to be a chilling effect. And I think you're right. They probably won't herd us all into camps. It's too productive for them. I mean, at some point, statists or the elite realized that free-range slaves are a lot more productive than caged slaves.
Did you know that back in the day, I think it was in the 1800s or 1700s, the King of England outlawed coffee shops because he said that's where people met to plan insurrection?
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends podcast. Freedom Fiends is now available for 24/7 streaming to your iPhone, Android phone, or other chromed robot turd. Click on the streaming audio link on freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFeens.com.
See, and again, he went in the middle. He didn't ban pubs, which is obviously where people go more than
which would have caused
shops.
A revolution.
Right.
And they probably didn't plan as much insurrection in the pubs because they were drinking and happy, although they might have been drinking and pissed. But yeah, it's a good point. It's like, you know, they're not going to outlaw guns outright because people would go use them, but they will squeeze you until it's virtually impossible to own them or use them or train with them.
Yeah, yeah. Or as the bad Quaker Ben Stone says, what they do is they'll even cede a little bit of territory, like with things like stand your ground laws or something like that, until you get used to it. And then it's a gradual thing. So you'll have this immense, powerful state who will every now and then throw you a bone.
You know why I call him Ben Quaker? I thought about
it
this.
Sounds
the other
good.
Day. No, it comes from being in punk rock bands, like that's how you refer, like, you know, Dave Dichter, the singer of MDC. If you're talking about him, like, oh, I saw Dave the other day. You're like, oh, I saw Dave MDC the other day.
You know? Their first name and then
their band.
The band.
And it's Ben and his band. Bad Quakers, his band.
Which we do to ourselves. You're Michael Fien, I'm Nima Fien.
Yeah. So there.
Luckily, you know, so, yours rhymes with your last name, so it sounds cool.
And then there's Deborah Jean Fien, my wife. Deborah Jean Dean Fien. So somebody complained about me saying, so talk about that, like I just did, as an interview technique. They said they really didn't like it. Said it sounded like a shrink.
I think it works if you use it sparingly. I used to use it when I interviewed people.
I got it from you.
Did
or
you?
Else from, like, you know, Bryant Gumbel or somebody.
Although my structure was reversed. I would be like, talk about blah, 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 rather than, so the way you do it, your format is, so such and such happened. Talk about that. So,
well, no, what it is with me is it is kind of like a shrink. It's like I let the other person just talk and talk and talk. And then when they say something I want to hear more about to draw them out on that subject, I say, talk about that.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that I did it. Until
really?
Someone pointed it out to me. But yeah.
You do it often. I wouldn't say that's your only technique, but you do it often.
It's my only technique, man. It's all I got.
Yeah. Well, I used to do it all the time on TV, but then again, you know, in TV, you don't hear my questions unless it's something really awesome that I set out to on purpose ask you. Like, we used to call them reporter questions, or questions on tape is what they called them at my last station. And sometimes we would do it just to F with people. And it could be kind of fun. It was one of the few fun things I did.
How would you F with people with it?
Let's see. So we had this situation where it was Prosser High School, a high school here sort of on the hinterlands, like not even part of the small town I'm in now. And they had like three break-ins and vandalisms in like a matter of 3 weeks. And, you know, they didn't have cameras, or the cameras weren't working, the doors weren't locked. And so, you know, I cornered the principal and was asking questions like, why didn't you guys just lock the doors? And he was like, well, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes they're not locked. I'm like, so that you don't lock your doors, you don't give everybody a key. You know, you just sort of grill them in that line. Like, why did you F up? And he did not talk to me for the rest of my tenure there. He made it a point to avoid me whenever possible.
Speaking of local tyranny, I keep going on about the library here, but I got another like 4-color glossy 5-page booklet in the mail yesterday that everybody in town got. And first of all, I'm thinking, like, they should take the money they're putting into trying to get more money and just use that money. You know, it costs a lot of money to print something like that and send it out to 50,000 people. But they sent it out, and it had this, like, now I find out more of what they're trying to do. They're not trying to improve the current library. They're trying to build a second library. And they had, like, frequently asked questions. And they had, like, 10 questions there about why this is needed. None of the questions, and this is the one I was looking for, was who's going to pay for it. That was not a fucking question on this thing.
Yeah, because nobody cares. They think government money just comes out of, you know, nowhere.
Obama's like going to pay my rent from his stash.
Yeah. Well, and
The people that are fighting for this library and who will go, oh, that makes sense, think of the children, are people who would be so fucking offended by seeing that black lady on TV saying, Obama's going to pay my rent. But it's the same fucking thing, man.
Same thing. Yep. Exactly. And they don't get it. Yeah. That's part of pushing the paradigm that it's all the same. You know, if you get disgusted over it's free swipe yo EBT and welfare moms, then you should be just as frustrated and annoyed by people getting free libraries, or, you know, the government repaving the roads and all sorts of things that come from taxation. It's not to say these things are bad. It's not to say that roads are bad or libraries are bad or reading's bad and schools are bad. It's not what we're saying. We're saying stealing is bad.
You know, I've had an interesting discussion lately with some really longtime libertarians and minarchists and anarchists about the role of policing and courts in libpair.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the conclusion they fed me basically is, or they're saying to me and other people, is Yeah, we don't need the government to take care of the roads. The free market would take care of that. But we absolutely need some limited court and policing system, you know, not to bust people for weed, but like for real crimes. And, you know, their answer is, well, you know, to the like Heinlein or L. Neil Smith thing of, well, there would be voluntary courts, citizen courts that would take care of that kind of thing. And, you know, their answer is, no, that wouldn't work because your neighbor would steal your horse. What are you doing? You're making a lot of noise.
Sorry. Go on. Your neighbor would steal your horse, and what would you do?
Yeah. You know, your neighbor steals your horse. You get your private police force that you hire to go talk to him, and they're going to say, you need to come with us. We're going to convene a citizen court. And your neighbor says, I do not recognize the authority of you people, points a gun at him and says, get the fuck off my property. What happens then? So
a number of things.
Without going into the number of things. I don't want to go into the number of things. That's the whole point of where I'm going at.
Okay.
I wrote an essay about this. It's short, but it says my take on this. I'd like you to read it. It's on page 2 under something I wrote on a forum.
Okay. Titled, Something I Wrote on a Forum by Michael W. Dean. Read by Nima Vedati. Regarding all the how would the courts and policing work in libertarian paradise in many discussions I have, it comes down to the same arguments as, but who would take care of the roads without the government? And, but who would feed grandma and starving children without the government? I'm really fond of something Stefan Molyneux said on the subject. I think it's dead on correct, better than anything else I've heard or come up with on my own, and it's my new go-to argument in these situations. I'm paraphrasing, but it's basically this. Worrying about how would it work isn't the real argument. The real argument is government is immoral because government is based on aggression. Dismissing a desire for the absence of government because of how would it work is like someone in 1850 America saying, I'd like to get rid of slavery, but we can't because the cotton won't get picked. No, you get rid of slavery because it's the moral thing to do. Then the cotton gets picked anyway. People find a way. I would add this. We don't really know how any of this would work in the absence of government because they won't let us try. They have a monopoly on all this stuff. I hate simplifying it to the free market would take care of it, but think about how computers were when only the government had them. They were slow, unreliable, required a team of scientists to run them. They cost millions of dollars and filled a building. Then the free market got a hold of computers, many great minds worked on them, and now the cheap iPhone that fits in your pocket is far better computer than the giant government computers of 1955. Computers are the one major piece of technology that the government has had the least amount of monopoly involvement in. Cars haven't advanced nearly that much because the government so closely controls their production. There is plenty of good conjecture on how cops and courts would work in Libpair, in fiction written by Heinlein or L. Neil Smith, but I think that worrying about the minutiae of how would it work is intellectual masturbation. It's fun intellectual masturbation, and I've done a lot of it, but it's not the really important thing. I think that we can talk these things until we're blue in the face. It's exactly like playing Model UN in high school. The really important thing is teaching as many people as possible, especially young people, that all government is immoral, and teaching them why government is immoral. All nanny laws and all taxes are enforced with the threat of a gun and the cage, and you can't opt out. That's the basic nut of it. Once they get that, you can only follow with examples of how things would work better without the government. But the moral argument is the most important part. We need many more minds on the side of non-aggression before we can drop the detailed blueprints for LibPair.
Worms.
Nice.
Thanks. And that's available.
True.
That's available on michaelwdean.com if you'd like to read it. Let's take a break and then discuss.
Okay.
Like listening to the Freedom Fiends but want them to listen to you? Contact the Fiends at talkback@freedomfiends.com. That's talkback@freedomfiends.com.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think you're really spot on when you say that it's just intellectual masturbation because it's really not the point. And I guess the way I was thinking about it today is it's kind of like space, right? So you don't have oxygen in space, you don't have air, and you have very limited gravity. That doesn't mean people can't live there, even for an extended period of time. You do have things to overcome, but because you have a problem to overcome doesn't mean it won't be overcome if people put their minds to it. It doesn't mean it's impossible. So the same way in society, if you had the lack of a government, yeah, things would have to change.
And you know, another criticism I heard on this board of the minarchists arguing with me on this anarchist ideal, which this thing I wrote was a response to, was, you know, that somebody said, anarchists are never going to be happy with, you know, with any amount of anything. And I don't think that's true. If the government tomorrow scaled down to about 1% of its size, I would be dancing in the fucking streets.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I'd be very
happy. Still be working. I'd still be doing right. this with you. There'd still be work to do. But, you know, if they legalized weed, legalized guns, quit giving everybody money, lowered taxes to about a tenth of what they are now, made it a felony for a cop to oppress somebody, pulled everybody out of all the wars over there, even if they still kept a military, if they pulled everybody out of all the bullshit wars, you know, there's about five other things I could list that that would be my demands. I would be really happy.
Yeah, yeah. Although you wouldn't be happy infinitely. And I think that's a good thing. That's a good thing about anarchists, that they would want to keep fighting to get rid of the state wherever it exists and wherever that kind of thought exists, in the sense that it could take away our freedoms at some point in the future. If you get satisfied with the government, that's their whole strategy. Like we said earlier, it's gradualism. They wait until everybody in society, or at least a big enough majority, is happy with some form of tyranny. And then they gradually take the next step. And so I think if you did live in a situation where the minarchists got all of their ways, it would only last, you know, a couple decades.
Well, I mean, the founding fathers had this problem. They had a revolution, and they scaled government back to about 1% of it was. They started a new government that was about 1% of the size of the king, mm-hmm. being able to kick in their door and quarter soldiers there anytime you wanted and tax them however you wanted with no representation. You know, I mean, the American Revolution was largely fought over the king trying to take their guns away and having taxes that were about 1% of what taxes are now overall.
right, right, right. And immediately, you know, well, almost immediately after the revolution and everything, some status said, well, you know, these Articles of Confederation really aren't working for us. Let's do a constitution.
And, you know, really, I think that the good guys in that fight, the ones that weren't the Hamiltonians, I think that they were a little bit too optimistic and trusted people a little bit too much, because if they could have seen where things had gone with what they wrote, they wouldn't have had the Second Amendment. They would have had Hassel Doctrine. Mm-hmm. Really.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine they wouldn't have even signed on to the Constitution. They would have said, no way, man. That's way too centralizing of a force. Yeah. We are not going to do that. We sign this Constitution now. Even if you ratify the Bill of Rights, it's still going to end up to be a status mind fuck, you know, a couple hundred years from now, which it has.
Or a dozen years from then.
Dozen, yeah.
You know, the thing that most people don't understand about the American Republic, what the thing that was formed after the American Revolution, bore little resemblance to what we have now. You know, literally, like Thomas Jefferson, if somebody claiming to have the authority that the EPA has now and came in on his farm and said, oh, we're going to annex this and take this part of your land because there's a river coming through here and we need to protect this, Thomas Jefferson would have fucking shot them. There was no concept of a federal government in the way there is now. And America was not what it is now. It was a bunch of states that were separate entities all under one banner. The federal government didn't exist like it exists now.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't even as centralized as the EU, you know? Yeah. It was like Europe before – well – maybe not before.
It was more like, you know, 13 countries that had a meeting place.
There you go. There you go. Yeah. Yeah. And then again, I also go back to Molyneux's argument, which I do tend to believe, that the smaller government you start out with, as long as there's that seed of aggression, as long as there's some power to tax or to raise some kind of army or to control things at gunpoint, the smaller you make it, the bigger the government will eventually be.
I have never seen Molyneux as angry as he was at the end of my interview with him. Have you?
No, I've never seen him angry. It was beautiful.
I've never seen him angry. It was beautiful. It was.
I actually took a clip of it, and it's part of the bridge on one of my songs that's going to be in the new album. I've already finished the song, and the middle 16, no, less than 16. It's a weird bridge. It's like 12 bars because he talked for a long time, and I wanted to put all the great stuff in. And it's just him talking. You know, it's got music behind
it. I can't wait
it,
to hear that.
Passionate, yeah.
Nice.
And I really believe what he says when he says, you know, America has the biggest government history has ever known, and we started with one of the smallest as far as actual centralized governments go. And the reason is because you had this such a giant level of economic freedom because the government was small. People made a lot of money, and then that led to there being a calls for more government because there was so much.
That sounds like a call for a bigger government, but it's not.
No. The call is to not plant the seed of aggression. Right. The call is you can't be a minarchist because then you have aggression in the system, and it's like the one spoiled apple will spoil the whole bunch. It's inevitable. If you plant that germ, you're going to get the infection no matter what. So you have to have a sterile society as far as aggression goes. You have to not tolerate it in any sense. That is the only form of zero tolerance that we should be pushing for is no tolerance for any government. Well, any aggression anyway, government,
I mean,
or otherwise.
A couple things I'm thinking of there is, like, first of all, did he say we? Because he lives in Canada.
I don't know. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, so I don't recall.
But
he's
stateless.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, the we can't tolerate any. I mean, you know, the Wyoming rifle people would say, the Wyoming rifle libertarians would say, well, what does that mean? You shoot the bastards, you know? And he's not a gun guy. And I've been specifically asking, and not saying that anyone in Wyoming wants to shoot anybody, but, you know, they train, a lot of people train to have the ability to shoot a man-sized target at 500 yards. I cannot do it. You could do it at 300. I can't do it. But I taught you. So that was my purpose in the world. So, you know, what do you do when you're oppressed? Just bitch about it on the internet? I mean, that's what we're doing and what he's doing. But my question is, like, with people that don't have, and I'm trying to basically be the bridge between the theorist libertarians that don't have guns, that have great theory, like Stefan Molyneux, and the gun people, which I'm surrounded by here in Wyoming. So, you know, where's the answer lie?
I don't know. I thought you were the bridge.
You are too. You and me.
Yeah. See, that's a tough one. And I think it's different for each individual, but I do think the first step is to accept freedom as your personal Lord and Savior, so to speak.
Yeah, really. I mean, and let me interject here with a follow-up that I had to the thing that I wrote. Is I'm not embarrassed to say that I was a libertarian Republican before becoming an anarchist. It allows me to speak to people who still believe in some state. It's similar to how a recovering alcoholic does not hide his past because it allows him to speak to the active drunk who's still suffering and say, I'm not some doctor looking down at you. I'm not some priest or judge looking down at you. I am you.
Yeah.
And this leads into the, like, you know, statism is a disease and we are the cure, which, you know, you kind of said something about earlier. And here's the exact quote from AA that I tried to paraphrase last week that is how I deal with people that are statist that want to talk to me but want to discuss things. And I basically lay it out to them, and I'm done arguing. I will walk away and say, go listen to Old Freedom Fiends if you want to hear my process. But, you know, here's the exact quote, and I think this is about alcoholics, but I think it really fits with statism. It was statist. It's, rarely have we, and it definitely fits into the, you must accept it to you as liberty as your Lord Jesus Christ and Savior, which is kind of how AA is about the program, and it's how we are about liberty.
Yeah.
And it's, the quote is,
Rare, and this is from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. They are usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way.
Yeah. You're listening to the Freedom Fiends Podcast. Available at FreedomFiends.com. Although I would say with statists, it's hard to tell if people are born statists or made statists. And I think maybe it's sort of a mix. You know, I think you can be born with inclinations towards liberty or not. And then the indoctrination either completely changes you one way or the other. You know, some people have the adverse reaction or the opposite reaction to indoctrination that the state wants. You know, people like me who were able to pimp the system still look successful to the bigwigs, but realize that it was BS and realize it maybe even later in life, but still have a sense of it when they were going through it. And so I think you're right. There are some people who won't ever get it, but I think we just have to, in our own personal lives, show why it works, to lead by example, to not get stressed about things that normally statists would get stressed about, to be self-reliant, to not be scared when the news comes on and says there's a bunch of gangbangers, because we're well-trained with a weapon, and we know we're probably a better shot than somebody who's never shot before, but Mexican carries a revolver because they think it looks badass. You know, we have to, within ourselves, achieve something that is enviable. And if we do that, then people will envy us. And what does that lead to? It leads to imitation. It leads to people wanting to be like us. People saying, well, you know, how come that guy seems to have it together? How come that guy doesn't get deathly afraid of people wearing turbans? You know, what is it that guy has or is listening to or is doing that I don't have? I think that's how we win.
I'm more afraid of I don't break any laws, and I am more afraid of a cop when I see a cop than I am when I see someone with a turban or someone who's wearing baggy pants and a hoodie and is brown. I really am.
I am too. Because I think if people can harness that, because I think that is very universal. How many people see a cop in their rearview mirror and think, oh, great, I feel protected? No. When you see a cop in your rearview mirror, you get a rush of adrenaline. I think we all do that.
Yeah, because the you know, the guy with the turban is a guy with a turban. He's not a terrorist. A terrorist is going to wear a business suit. You know, he's not going to, in America, he's not going to look like a guy, Alibaba or something. The gangbang, the guy dressed like a gangbanger is probably not a gangbanger. Mm-hmm. But if he is a gangbanger, he's probably not going to fuck with me because, you know, I'm just some guy. If he does fuck with me, I have a good chance against him because I'm always armed.
Yep.
And so is my wife. So, but I don't really have a good chance against a cop. If a cop decides, you know, most cops in Wyoming are not going to decide to fuck with you, but some will. They're importing ones from out of state.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if a cop decides to fuck with you, there's not a lot you can do. You know, they can plant shit on you. They can throw you in cage. They can say you resisted. They can do all sorts of stuff just because you're challenging their authority.
They can kill you.
They can kill you. I mean, they can kill you and get a paid vacation.
They can literally kill you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And cops are good shots. Cops are probably a better shot than me and you.
Nah, not all of them.
Not all of them.
But they have the law behind them. They're better shots than most gangbangers, except in L.A., because in L.A., the range that I went to, the outdoor range that I went to, there were gangbangers practicing next to me. Mm. In L.A., gangbangers go to the range. Okay.
In Casper, I doubt they do.
I don't think there's gangbangers here, man. I think the only gangs here are white motorcycle gangs, and they don't fuck with people.
There's white juggalos, which I don't know if I'd consider them a gang, but you know who I'm talking about. You see the ICP stickers on all the young kids' cars. The people who,
yeah, but that doesn't mean that they are the rare juggalo who goes out and kidnaps people and beats people up for no reason.
That's true. But I think there are some people in Wyoming who think they're badasses because they listen to ICP, and they would probably glorify violence in their own minds and think it was
Where have you seen these people? At Walmart?
No, just various places in Wyoming. I know ICP is huge on the res, and I'm not saying that everybody who listens to ICP is going to be a violent person. I'm just saying that I think there are wannabes out there who might think it's cool to be violent.
Good luck to them if they ever encounter me and try that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I ain't afraid of no clowns. I ain't afraid of those clowns.
Send in the clowns.
I know. Which somebody's going to like repost somewhere like, yo, dude in Wyoming called out all ICP fans. Go fuck them up.
Nah. No, I'm not doing that. I'm not trying to say that you're lame or that you're violent if you listen to ICP. I'm just saying that...
You're saying they're representing in CASPA, yo.
There you go.
Yeah. Anyway, so we got off onto a weird tangent there.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
Has nothing
my
to
bad.
Do with,
that was my tangent.
Nothing to do with our redemption in the third act here that we're going for. Yeah. There was a vet. I don't know. I don't want to do any more news items. I don't want to do any more tyrannies today.
No. We were sort of on a philosophical tip there, and I'm sorry. I led us away because I had to take a shot at ICP. My bad. My bad, guys.
Yeah. I don't think you took a shot at them. I think you said that there are four or five of them in this town of 50,000.
Yeah, yeah. The larger point being, well,
I dated a girl. The first girl I ever met that was the first person, the first time I heard of ICP was way before they blew up. It was probably in 94, 95. It was this chick that was a fan of my band that wrote me and wanted to fuck me, so I went out to Rhode Island to see her, of all places. And it turned out she was, like, medically addicted to Percocet. Like, our first date, she picked me up at the airport and then went to the drugstore and was arguing with the druggist, saying, no, you didn't refill this three times. Give me more drugs. And then it turned out that her hobby was writing to serial killers in prison. Ooh. And then selling their letters on eBay. Ooh. That was how she financed her drug habit.
I feel like there's, and I'm not saying this is a just ICP thing, but I feel like there's a sense among some young people that society is fucked and it's horrible and it oppresses us, which is true. That is completely true. But I don't feel like the solution is to glorify violence or be generally angry and be like, fuck the whole world. I think we need to channel our anger at the system itself.
If anyone doesn't know what ICP is, it's Insane Clown Posse. It's a rap group whose fans wear clown makeup and call themselves Juggalos. And a very small percentage of Juggalos have exhibited behavior that resembles gang behavior to various police agencies.
There you go. There you go.
That's the best description I can come
up
with.
It's very diplomatic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're really funny. They're really retarded. I mean, intentionally, they would admit they are they're really, really dumb. Their music is really, really dumb. It's really funny too.
Yeah.
I liked the what was it, some cartoon that they did a guest appearance on. They were like in court in suits, but in their face makeup, and they were like, you know, what is it? Violent J is one of them, and the other was, what's the other one's name?
I have no idea, man.
Bag of weed or something. They were in court, and their attorney was saying like, oh no, they're good, upstanding boys. They do community service voluntarily, and including reading to the dead. And it cut to this image of them, like a guy in a hospital bed who had recently died, and there was like a disco ball with flashing lights on it, and they were rapping over his corpse in the bed. We read to the dead.
Nice. Yeah. We're getting more on the tangent. We were trying to get away
I think
from
we are.
The tangent, but we're failing.
I ain't afraid of no clowns.
I ain't afraid of no clowns. Yeah. Except for clown.
Oh, yeah. And that cocaine clown on Death Clock.
Oh, yeah.
I do cocaine!
Yeah.
Who's basically based on
David Lee Roth.
Roth,
yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Roxo.
Oh, good times. Yeah. Good times.
I think that's a good place to end, man.
Yeah. Yeah, we were trying to give you some grand philosophical thing, but instead you get Roxo the clown,
so. We ended up talking about Death Clock and Insane Clown Posse. All right.
All right. Peace.
All right, man. Word. Worms.
Hello, Freedom Fiends. It's your boy me from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I own me and that include endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every week, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.